price is what you pay. Value is what you get. That's the famous quote by Warren Buffett. And yes, Warren Buffett is very much someone who invests his money very smartly. But the quote is still very appropriate to today's topic, because today we want to talk about value-based selling.
I'm Tim.
My name is Jan, and together we are Sales Excellence.
That is your podcast for software B2B sales and pre-sales.
We believe in a strategic, value-based and customer-centric sales approach.
With our knowledge and experience, we would like to help you find new inspiration and more success in your daily sales lives.
That's right. And with that being said, welcome to a new episode of the Sales Excellence Podcast. And for the longtime listener, he or she might already notice that this is a topic we have spoken before about. In fact, our very first episode was called Value-Based Selling, and we are picking up the topic again for mainly two reasons. Firstly, you can tell we are speaking English and trying to accommodate some of our new listeners on this podcast here. And secondly, we have also revised the structure content a little bit, which means if you've listened to the first episode, I think it's still worthwhile listening to this one because we are adding a few things.
So what's going on in the context of B2B sales scenarios? They are becoming more and more complex from our perspective, which makes it more challenging for sales and pre-sales people, for sure. And customers are more and more informed, right? So there's so much transparency through stuff like internet, informations are available. So they have much more knowledge than they had years ago, right? If you try to imagine a sales cycle. We also see more and tougher competition in the market, and all that basically results into higher expectations to our sales and pre-sales people, or I would say they need more skills, right? They need to be prepared in a better way, and they need to find a smart way to get ahead of the competition and finally win the deal with the customer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, all these things that you just mentioned, I think we've picked up on these before on previous episodes, right? I remember the conversations we had with Dieter on Challenger Sales, where the problem statement was pretty much identical. But again, today we are very much focusing on that value-based approach. And therefore, maybe a little bit of an introduction. What does value-based selling really mean? I mean, you've just elaborated rightfully so. Okay, today's world is becoming more complex, right? Negotiations and sales processes are becoming longer, more complicated, additional stakeholders, more lengthy, and therefore also more expensive, right? For buyers and for sellers, in fact. So the idea of value-based selling is to have a positive influence on the perceived value of the service or product and the achievable price, of course, right? So, and that there's something interesting hidden in there, right? Because you say, okay, we're using value-based selling to increase the perceived value, which then in the end means, of course, you can argue to sell your product or service at a higher value. Is that even something that your customer wants? But we can debate that just now. In the end, the focus of the approach is on satisfying these complex needs of their customer as fully as possible, right? I think we talked about this also before. Buying centers don't consist of one or two people anymore. It's 7, 8, 9, 10 stakeholders that are really in the decision-making positions, and they all have potentially different views and therefore different needs. So this is really what's meant by complex needs, or by meant by saying satisfying these complex needs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, but to make it even more concrete, you have a little story to share from your personal experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I got involved with value-based selling when I was still working at one of my old employers, and was basically a technology company, mid-size company, well, I think around 10,000 employees, not so mid-sized anymore, borderline enterprise, right? But that being said, despite the fact that it was highly technology that we were selling there, it was still quite commoditized products in the end. Yeah. So the situation was that the typical salesperson would approach two stakeholders at the buying center, which would be like a technical specialist who would basically set all the check marks against the product that was sold, against the requirements they had. And the second person was basically the buyer. so the how to say purchaser, right? So the purchasing department, where they would basically see, okay, do we fall into the price range that they can accept? And when these two people were satisfied, you basically had a deal. That was the starting scenario. And then this company acquired a software company, because the software company that was bought at the time, they had a complementary solution to the products that were sold. I mean, without going into the details, but there was a strong synergy between the two. That being said, the software that we were supposed to sell then in this new environment had quite different stakeholders and had a much broader value proposition as opposed to the products that we had. So we were really challenged with rethinking our approach of who are these additional stakeholders, what are they interested in, and what's the value that we can bring. And that took some time to figure out. And there was some initial training we also had. I was in South Africa at the time. I was really lucky to participate in this initial pilot training. And there we were basically speaking about consultative value selling. And that's how I got involved. And yesterday I asked you the same question, right? I said, Jan, how did you get involved? And you couldn't even give me a right answer. You could say, oh, it just happened like that.
Yeah, no, I can't really remember where my starting point was. Maybe I'm already too old.
Yeah, my story is definitely more interesting than yours.
Yeah, that's for sure. But your story also brings me to the questions of where to start, right? If it comes to value selling. And to me, I think it has to do with two things at the very beginning. One is acceptance. So we need to accept that the world is as it is, right? So customers are more informed, there are more competitors, it's more challenging than ever before. And that brings me to the second point, which is, to me, mindset, right? If you would like to go into that direction of value-based selling, I believe you need to create that mindset within your team, within your company, that you would really like to do something differently, that you really would like to put your customer in the focus of all the stuff you are doing every single day. So customer success definitely first. And that is, from my perspective, nothing you can just switch on, right? So it's sometimes a very, very long process. But to me, it really starts with the mindset.
Mm-hmm. And I want to actually comment on that, because funnily enough, one of the first things we did at the time when we received the training was actually a personality test. So all of the salespeople, and I was lucky to be involved as well, even though I was in technical sales at the time, we were given a personality test and we got an analysis out of it. And I mean, without really saying, okay, you are not fit for this job or something like that. They didn't go that far. But they said, okay, there's an ideal profile if you want to go into solution sales environment as opposed to selling just products, right? And they distinguished between volume selling and value-based selling, and that two types of personalities and skill sets are required to excel in both, right? You can do both. I mean, there's no right or wrong. But it's certainly quite different. So that, I think, just adds a bit more tangible meat to the mindset topic that you just talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. So to me, it also means if you would like to establish a value-based selling kind of approach in your team or company, it's also leadership is heavily involved,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Basically, I mean, everyone is talking about, we are customer centric and we are customer focused and blah, 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 blah. But in my honest opinion, I think it's more talking than really following that kind of headline. So I believe if you really put your customer into the center of what you are doing day in and day out, it really means a lot of change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Needs to happen within your company. So back to mindset. I mean, bring that mindset to the table, discuss it with your team together with the leadership and really define what does it mean for your company. And in your example, I think it was a tough situation, right? Coming from that product-driven company, acquiring a software company, completely changing the value proposition, because now it's not just a product, it's maybe a combination, and you need to rethink the whole value prop and you need to accept, okay, there are other stakeholders and it's getting more and more complex, but it could add incredible value to what you're doing is a huge thing from my perspective. So it's not easy. So another one is basically if you have been that product-driven company, of, or if you were selling your product by features and functions, then I think you also need to step away from selling features and function and go into the direction to really figure out where you can deliver value and what kind of value you can bring to the table for your customer. So the basic question then is, how can we be relevant for our customer?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if I relate back again to that scenario we were facing ourselves with, I mean, at the time for us, it was the standard approach to talk about features and functions, right? Because we were approaching those technical guys at the buying center of our customers. And they wanted to know these features and functions because they wanted to see if the product is fit for the requirements. So it was all we did until then. So it definitely is very much a shift. Yeah? And being used to talk about features and function, then shifting to a value conversation, that certainly is quite a jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we always call it, right, the feature function shotgun approach. And I mean, if you have a software solution, there is a whole range of features you can talk about. There is no lack of features. You can talk about them day and night. But if that's really the things you should talk about, it's a different story. Yeah. So yeah. the quick answer is, I would say no in the first step for sure.
Yes, of course, you need all that features to bring the functionality to your customer. But if you try to sell your software by showing features, I don't think you will be successful in the long run, right? And I think CRM is an easy example, because if you just search on the internet for CRM providers, you will find a lot of CRM providers. And if you compare them in the first step, you will basically realize, oh, they all have the same functionality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And from the vendor perspective, they will realize the same. So if they look up their competitors, it's like, oh, basically they have the same feature set. Ideally, they have the same pricing or whatever. So how can we differentiate, right? Not by showing the customer our great features. Yeah. So we need to figure out what the value really can be for these customers. And that brings me to another very important topic. To me, if we talk about establishing value-based selling, it's definitely not a project, right? It is a process and it will never end. And two very important topics to me. One is, you need to create feedback loops, right? Mm-hmm. You need to exchange with your colleagues, other teams, also with your customers, to really figure out, are we going into the right direction? Are these changes paying off, right, in our daily business? And the second one, so you mentioned you had the training to get a kickstart, right? Mm-hmm. And I think having a training and getting it kick off is good stuff. But afterwards, you need to practice. If you don't practice, I don't believe you will ever get to a great level in value-based selling.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. I mean, I would even argue, even if you do product-based selling, I would argue that having a healthy feedback culture in your company and practice the pitch is still very useful. But the matter of fact is, when you do solution-based selling or value-based selling, it's just more complex because of the things that we just discussed, right? Traditional stakeholders, lengthier cycles, and so on. And therefore, the need to have good feedback and to practice your approach becomes even more pressing.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to sports, in my opinion. If you look at, I don't know, Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo, it looks pretty easy what these guys are able to do on the field, right? But we all know it's not, right? So they practice more than other people practice to get to that level of expertise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's the same in sales, right? So in theory, a lot of people know what value-based selling is and how it works, but there's a huge difference between knowing something in theory and really be able to apply it in your daily work.
I really like the way you pronounce the TH.
Ah, thank you, Tim.
My pleasure. Okay, so maybe it's time to shift gears and maybe we can talk about the question, What does a proactive and customer-centric approach to sales really imply, right? And where's this question coming from? Well, if you look, one of my favorite pages is the Wikipedia, of course, right? And on Wikipedia, you find quite a nice definition of value-based selling. And funny enough, the German Wikipedia page is more meaningful than the English one, of the rare examples. But they say value-based selling implies a proactive sales approach. And we found it quite valuable to dive into that proactive aspect of the definition. So, and I think one of the key points is, you already mentioned it, right? The customer centricity. Put your customer in the center of everything that you do. And think about, and the keyword you mentioned already earlier, think about what is really relevant. I think that's the first step.
Yeah, plus mindset, of course, as we talked about. Yeah. And then, as you said, a sales process, or let's call it a structured sales process. And we don't want to give a whole overview here, but there are a couple of methodologies available, and you guys maybe have heard about them. So like Miller-Hyman, Spin, Bund, value-based selling, challenger sale, and a couple of more. And we don't think there is the methodology.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong. Yeah.
You should use. I think it's good to get your heads around the available methodologies and really figure out what is valuable for your company, for your process, for your employees, and then adopt it basically to your needs, right?
Yeah. There's one other aspect which we don't have to go deep into now, but I'm almost inclined to call it a buying process, right? Because the selling process is one thing, but on the other side, and especially in complex buying scenarios, you need to understand how your target customer, how your prospect is actually making a buying decision. And our own sales process should be flexible enough to accommodate different buying, making decision processes, which truly are different in almost every single prospect.
Which basically means maybe we shouldn't call it sales process anymore. So maybe you guys need to think more about your buyer's journey, right? And that basically will then define your process, which is, again, mindset, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although I also find the buying journey is such an often used term, but I think in many cases it's used as a buzzword, but without really reflecting on the deeper meaning of what it actually entails. So it's definitely not easy stuff that we're talking about here. But okay, let's put a check mark behind sales process, because I think we even had another episode where we talked deeper about sales processes, and maybe we'll also do this one again in English at a later time. What else is important to a proactive sales approach?
So in respect of sales process, buyer's journey, and these kind of things, for me, one piece is highly, highly important, right? And that's qualification discovery. And it doesn't matter which kind of methodology you would like to use or you will apply for your team and for your company. In every kind of process or methodology, you would need to have good qualification and discovery, because that's the basics to then apply a real value-based approach, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to talk about qualification discovery, we can also think about potentially doing a reloaded episode. I think we have two dedicated episodes for each already in German, because they are, in our view, one of the most important pieces to talk about. And again, we have to come back to the topic of mindset, right? Because if you want to do deep discovery, you need inherently to be curious about how your customer works, how not only obviously the buying decision is made, but how the solution that you are selling could potentially impact different processes, different interfaces, different stakeholders, how it influences the company's strategy, and maybe even the market, right? So I often like to talk about the four layers of discovery, or the four layers of communication. And it really builds on, it starts with technology, then you go processes, then you go organization, and then you go strategy and market. So these are the layers, and for that curiosity and the willingness to ask questions, and the willingness, even more important, to actually listen to your customer is extremely important.
And it also helps, from my perspective, very quickly to create a healthy pipeline, right? Because if you qualify early and qualify hard, so is that really something we can address? Is our solution made to solve the customer's problem or expectation? You can, again, focus on the right stuff. And if you identified the right kind of prospects and opportunities, then you switch into the discovery mode and you discovered it even deeper. and that's the way forward. So it's also in your own interest to be sensitive with your available resources, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I would like to add here, right, because in the past often, and we almost did it now here in this conversation as well, the terms qualification and discovery are becoming used a bit exchangeably. Although I would argue that they are quite distinct, right? Qualification for me is the question, do we have the chance to sell something here? Is there really a need at this prospect to place and to receive an order, so to say, at the end? And discovery for me is the question, it goes one layer deeper. This is the question, where are the stakeholders that are to which we are relevant? And what is the value that we can pose? So it's discovery for me has much more layers and more complexity. That being said, it's not less important than qualification. I think they're both equally important, right? And qualification is also a thing you do continuously, right? Yeah. From the very start of the first conversation up to the last point until the signature is on the contract, you should still always ask the question, why would my customer spend, I don't know, 500,000 euros with me, right, on this project?
Yeah. And there are a lot of influencers, right? So as you said, you should always be in qualification and discovery mode, and you discover more and more information together with your prospect or customer, and it might change your view on the potential deal. So something will happen, a stakeholder will change, a new one is coming in, has different opinions. So yeah, it's not black and white, definitely not. It goes hand in hand in some respect, and you should always be in that kind of mode, right? Which also means you should bring curiosity to the table from the very beginning. So you should be curious about your customer, their challenges, their customers, what they really would like to achieve. And I really believe that this helps to drive a deal forward in a positive direction.
Yep. And I think you've told the story many times, at least to me, maybe to other people as well, right? With the that study that I think it was Toyota did at some time, where they discovered basically you need to ask 5 times why before you actually get to the core of the topic, right? Do you want to elaborate on that one?
I have a story behind that one, yeah. So when I was with Salesforce and I was in the role of a pre-sales engineer, right, or solution consultant, we had a discovery call with a potential customer, the sales guy and I. We had that discovery call. And the sales guy asked at the very beginning, hey, Mr. Customer, what is your goal, right? What would you like to achieve? And the customer said, transparency. That's what I would like to achieve. And then the sales guy was going to the next question. I was like, hey, wait a second. Because in my head, it was like, okay, they would like to achieve transparency. What should I do in my demo, right? What could I do in my demo? Maybe I could show a very shiny, fancy dashboard, but would there be any meaning to the customer? And I was like, yeah, not really, right? And I said, for what do you need transparency, right? Why is transparency so important to you? And so it was like back and forth in questioning. Mm-hmm. And 5 times why later, we were at a point where the customer has told us, you know what? What we would really like to achieve is to be more productive in our organization and to be able to identify the right actions to get more productive. We need transparency. Right? Mm-hmm. So the goal is basically not getting transparency. The goal is getting more productive within my organization. Knowing that, I was able to spin up a completely different demo, right? Because the focus was now getting more productive and everything in the demo was related to that kind of topic. And finally, it resonated very, very well. But stopping after the first question would basically mean I can only show a colorful dashboard and worst case, no meaning to the customer at all. And even during that discovery session, you already built trust, right? Because the customer really felt like, oh, these guys are interested in me and they trying to ask the right questions to get together with me to the right point here.
Mm. Yeah, I always like to say customers buy from those who understand them, right? So that plays to that story of yours. And I think another important aspect is also interesting to highlight. So you said, okay, I don't just want to put up a colorful dashboard that looks great. I want there to be meaning. So you asking 5 times why in the end and made you think about what type of KPIs can I visualize in this type of dashboard that will assist these people to become more productive. But what it also did, not only could you design a better dashboard, you could also think about what else can I incorporate into my demo that my customer hasn't maybe even thought about that will make my salespeople, sorry, in this case, it's about sales because it was CRM, obviously, but if it's another solution, it could be something else that makes these guys more productive. Right. And then you could maybe show two or three other use cases that play to that productivity requirement, which is not only dashboard, maybe, but yeah. maybe something else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And this is for me the key essence of discovery, because discovery also means discovering where you can really provide more value. Right. And
yeah.
this is a conversation that's not only good for us as a seller, because we can then become more convincing in our arguments why you should purchase from us. But it's also more valuable for the customer because he will be educated on where solutions can really drive his own business.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that so asking why, like little children doing it, right? So is one of the most simple questions you can basically ask, right? And as you said, so we step down to, okay, productivity or increasing productivity is a key topic here. And of course, then we ask questions like, how would you measure that, right? So Mr. Customer, you tell me how you would measure it. And I can then show you that it's possible and we can automate all these processes you do manually today. And as you said, so that gives us as a vendor the opportunity to also think outside the box, right? So, hey, productivity is the main topic and we're talking about whatever lead to opportunity process and a little bit of KPIs. But yeah, there is much more. There can be much more. So let's think about that and find even more value for the customer. But yeah, so curiosity and mindset definitely pays off in these situations.
Yeah. Yeah, great. So the question that opened the section here was, what does a proactive sales approach imply, right? The last point we have here after asking five times why is the identification networking with multiple stakeholders, which I feel like we have already basically covered to the extent that is appropriate here, unless you have something to add?
No.
No, I think it's also good. And I think we already mentioned a couple of things that lead us to the next point here, right? Because we would like to conclude this episode with talking about what's in it for the customer. Right. So I think we just had one particular example where value for the customer is additionally generated. But in the end, of course, the underlying question is why should your customer spend that money with you? So you can potentially think about calculating an ROI. Right, return on invest, or more generally say, okay, what are the economic KPIs that we need to fulfill here to actually be successful, right?
And not even what do we have to fulfill here. I think it can be a very interactive conversation with your potential customer, right?
Yeah.
If you really thought about your product and what kind of value you can bring to your customers, then you can create something like an ROI calculator or a simple sheet or whatever.
Yeah.
And just exchanging on these topics with your customer, it will maybe open their eyes and say, oh, we never thought about that, but you are right. And I mean, the ideal scenario I have in mind, so you're talking about that stuff, you do discovery, you present, you demo all these things, and then you step in and say, hey, let's have that ROI discussion for you. I mean, it first of all shows that we as the vendor, we truly believe that we can bring value to the table and that there is a return on investment.
Yeah.
And that we are openly willing to discuss it with our customer. And ideally, you would collaborate together on that kind of ROI calculator, right? And the customer would say, hey, that's an interesting point. And by the way, let me figure out what does it really mean. And I mean, you will learn so much, right? But you will also add a lot of value. And I don't think that there's no reason to not do it, right? Why should we hold back with what we can bring to the table for our customers?
Yeah, absolutely. And the final goal should be to really have like a complete picture of a potential impact of your solution, right? That's really the key, where you want to be. And for that, again, we come back to the point, you need to speak to multiple stakeholders and you need to talk to them deeply, right? And sometimes I think you need to establish a certain level of trust because they would expose them to some extent because they need to provide you with some numbers, maybe some figures. I mean, in the end, solutions in most cases bring some efficiency gain, which often can also lead to certain departments maybe not being used as much anymore because you're automating processes and so on, right? So that's a very deep conversation where you need a lot of rapport and trust before people will reply to these type of questions. That being said, an ROI can have multiple layers, right? I mean, you don't have to go to the 100th degree of ROI calculation where you really calculate down to the single euro. You can do a first estimate, maybe on a first stage, even not only quantitative, but you start with qualitative, right? And then as the conversation continues, you can add more numbers, more details to it, and then it becomes more justifiable and more accurate. And then, of course, the more accurate it is, the more believable it is. And I think that's a huge trap for ROIs, right? Because there's often assumptions in there. So you should validate these assumptions to the best degree possible. But you need to put assumptions in that the people that you speak to, like your C-level executive suite, they should believe in these assumptions. If you put too rough assumptions in there, they will say, nah, I don't believe it. And then your ROI falls flat, right?
Yeah, and then it's not ROI discussion. It's like more, oh, we have some marketing figures. Right?
Yes.
And they are bullshit anyway. Sorry for saying that. But as you said, the ROI conversations we have in mind or we imagine right now while talking about that topic, they are highly valuable, right? And they are always together with your potential prospect and client to really show what we are able to deliver to them, right?
So that brings me to another interesting point, because one thing we can discuss here, one is actually the right time to talk about the price, right? We started this episode by saying price is what you pay. So certainly the price at some point will enter the conversation. And maybe I relate back to my initial story where I came to value-based selling, because there was a situation where we had these software solutions then in place. We had one pitch with a customer, and then the customer was asking, yeah, what's it going to cost me? And the salesperson was actually very happy to provide a quote. And for me at the time, well, I didn't reflect much on it, but for me it didn't feel right because it was too early, because I felt, okay, there's so many conversations that we still need to have to understand really the impact yet. Now you're providing them with a price. And at the time she was very happy about it, because she said, okay, well, they're asking about it, surely they must be interested, right? And I always felt it was a bit dangerous. And now years later, I do believe it was dangerous to provide the price, because again, the question of why would we spend this type of money wasn't answered at the time. So I think there's certainly a good and a bad time to talk about price. And I'm interested to see what you say, Jan, but I would be inclined to say you should have the price conversation potentially later, after yourself, you're convinced that the impact you can provide is valuable enough to justify the price tag. The conflict I have in my mind, sometimes you find these type of prospects where you know, okay, they are maybe a bit short on cash, maybe they are still growing, still startup, maybe not so much money and so on. And if you're completely out of the ballpark, then there's no point in having actually continued conversation. So, and that's qualification again, right? So that's a bit of a conflict right there.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if there is the answer to it, right? Mm-hmm. So a good friend of mine, I worked together with him a long time ago, actually. He always said, so the customer was asking, how much will it cost, right? And he always said something like, $1 million if you don't do it. Right.
So it's a great response.
Yeah, always in that kind of trying to sell the value mode. But I think it's tough. I mean, I think it's fair that the customer is asking for the price. And I mean, look at all these cloud companies, they putting the price on the website, right? So it's already out there, and you can say, oh, it's 10 euros or dollars a month per user. I would have 100 users. Okay, here is my price, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so they know that, right? And they then asking that question about the price, and I truly believe they would like to get a cheaper price, right? So I'm completely with you. I think we should try to justify the value of what we are doing as much as possible. But on the other hand, you can't ignore that pricing discussion. So I think you need to find a smart way within your team and within your company how to handle that, right? So what I have seen is also, if they asking at the very beginning, okay, you can give them the list price. You can say, hey, our pricing is on the website, and we are more than happy to go into a value-based discussion with you to justify that for you, right? And I mean, I don't think you need to promise anything at the very beginning. I mean, maybe also depends where you are. Is it kind of enterprise sales, or is it small and medium business? It will be a little bit different. And I also think you don't need to give them something without getting something back, right? So I have seen so many salespeople who are really happy to provide discounts, right, without asking for anything, right? Mm-hmm. Which means to me, it seems there is no value. Mm-hmm. So if I give you something, then you would need to be a reference for us, or you should be willing to speak at an event or something like that. I mean, we had a nice episode with Christian Wirth, only talking about pricing and that kind of stuff. So I believe we could fill another whole episode.
In fact, we have filled another whole episode.
Yeah, we did.
It's not out there yet, but it will probably be by the time this one comes live.
Yeah, so. And it will be in German, by the way.
And it will be in German, so indeed, yes.
Maybe we should do something about pricing in English as well. But yes. I mean, I completely agree. It's an important topic. I don't think there is an easy answer to it from my perspective. But I think it's definitely worthwhile to spend time with your team to talk about it, right? To create some kind of, I don't know, maybe methodology or kind of reply or whatever it will be. What is important, I believe, is there shouldn't be any fear to talk about price, right? And I think it's fair to also include the customer into that discussion, right? And always try to make it valuable, right? And at some point, maybe you need to figure out, hey, is maybe that your only driver, Mr. Customer, right? Is price the only thing where you will decide on? And then back to qualification, you can tell the customer, hey, maybe you are not longer a fit for us, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can change that conversation. Initially, they thought, hey, we need to buy something very cheap, but then during the conversation with you, they will basically realize, oh, there is a lot of more value and we haven't realized that before. So I truly believe if a customers realize how much value they can get, they are also willing to pay a higher price.
Yeah. I mean, while you were saying these things, I'm almost becoming a bit philosophical here, because now in the end, I mean, the experience I had, it was about commoditization, right? The products we were selling at the time were highly commoditized. So it was functional spec versus price, deal done, right? And now you brought and you will always bring the example, rightfully so, of CRM, because it's just easy to understand. But you also say there's, like, I don't know, 50 vendors out there that can sell me a CRM right now. And I mean, in the end, are they all not pretty much more or less doing the same thing? So maybe a company could even be very successful in having a product commoditized sales approach, leaving the whole solution sales out and just say, okay, here's our CRM, you pay €5 for it. And I think maybe some company like HubSpot or something, maybe they're doing it like that because they are very lean in their sales organization, right? They you can sign up, you don't speak to anyone, you can purchase the license just like that. Of course, with a company like Salesforce or SAP or whatever, it doesn't work like that if you want to purchase their CRM. So something to think about, maybe worth another episode to dig into. I would like to close the conversation with the question is, what's actually the benefit for our organization if we start doing this? And by our, I mean, as a sales organization, right? I mean, in the end, and I think this goes in line with our general context of this podcast, right? We always say we would like to bring you more inspiration and potentially some success to your daily sales lives. And I mean, if you have a complex software solution that you want to bring to market, value-based selling, the idea is to, of course, be more successful, to get better deals, right? Better fitted deals to the value proposition that you can provide. And of course, by qualifying early and discovering deeply, getting improved win rates, because you can just argue your solution so much better and you can disqualify opportunities that are not a great fit early on and therefore become a more efficient organization.
Yeah, 100%. And if you put your customer in the center, right, and you try to really be relevant with them every single second, I promise you, you will have happier customers.
Yeah.
Even if you need to say in some cases, no, hey guys, we are not the right fit for you, right? Today we can't make a deal, if you will, but they will call you the next time. If they got an issue the next time, they will call you 100%. And from my perspective, you will also have a lot of more fun, right?
Yes.
In your organization, in your daily life, with your colleagues. That's my honest opinion, or even that's what I faced really applying a value-based selling model.
Yeah, I do think it's quite subjective. I personally also enjoy the value-based approach much more. It's a very challenging thing, right? And I mean, it's up to everyone's individual preferences also, but I like to be challenged. And therefore, thinking about these complex buying scenarios is just a lot more fun, right? And then applying these methodologies that we talk about here.
I don't just mean that aspect, right? Also saying if you really put the customer in the center, right? I think it will be different, right? Mm-hmm. You will work in a different way. You will have different discussions, even internally, right? Because again, mindset goes into a clear direction. If you really can bring your whole organization behind that kind of goal, right? Really customer centricity, it will change the game, right? And you will know why you are doing all that stuff, right? And there will be so many good reasons doing that. That is what I also mean with having more fun, not just having that more complex scenario and being able to think in a different way with your customers, also how you would act internally together with your colleagues. So, I mean, it maybe sounds a little bit simple, but to me, all these things happening, if you really dedicate your mind to be customer-centric, it will change the game for a lot of companies.
I mean, you're almost coming from the direction of like how much personal fulfillment do you get out of that, because you are providing something not just to another company, but maybe on a broader scale to society potentially even, right? Because you're doing a useful impact. Okay. Yeah, I would agree. I like it a lot. And with that, I would say we can conclude today's episode, can't we, Jan?
Yeah.
Dear listeners, we are very happy if you stayed until the end with us. We hope you enjoyed this value-based selling reloaded, as this episode will be called. And I'm going against convention here, and I will have two call to actions for you guys. So dear listeners, please, we of course want to make our audiences bigger. That's one of the reasons why we switched part-time to English. And therefore, we would like to ask you to please give us a great rating on Apple Podcast. Why do I say Apple Podcast specifically? Well, it's still the major platform for podcasts, even though I'm using Android. But Apple Podcast is definitely great. So if you could give us 5 stars and a great review, we would really appreciate that. And secondly, also dear to our hearts, please follow us on LinkedIn. This is where we basically announce all of the things that are happening, all episodes. We're posting the occasional picture, the occasional article, potentially webinars and so on.
Yeah.
So we would really appreciate that.
And I mean, as we all like 5-star reviews or feedbacks, I mean, even if you have constructive criticism or whatever,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Put it in, shoot us an email, contact us on LinkedIn, or write that review into Apple Podcasts. We are definitely thankful for any kind of feedback. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, and we hear each other next time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.